Blog Talk Radio.
And live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, this is Dr. John Stamey with Pro Wrestling Interviews. We got a superb show tonight. We got great co-hosts. I can't wait to get started, so I think we'd better. First of all, our co-hosts from Columbia, South Carolina, the greatest lady wrestler of all time, in my opinion, and I think in a lot of opinions, the one and only Susan Green. How are you doing tonight, Susan?
I'm doing good, Dr. John. I just wish I could get over this injured leg that I did to myself.
Well, we have confidence that you will, and you'll be back out there at it. That's what we're hoping for. So it is great to have you on Pro Wrestling Interviews tonight because we got a great guest. You're going to know a lot about what he's done. And okay. From the Columbia area, probably we got lots of people from Columbia. One and only Sinister. How are you doing tonight, Sinister?
Oh, I'm doing great. How about you?
I am super. I'm glad to be here. It's 40 degrees, and it feels like summertime compared to this weekend. So we are glad to have you here with us. And from Richmond, Virginia, the one and only Steve Logan, Stellar Steve. How are you doing tonight, Steve?
I'm doing great. Was reading one of the chapters from Lance by Chance earlier, so I'm definitely looking forward to this guest tonight.
Well, that's great. Well, yeah, we're glad to have you. You're very knowledgeable about wrestling, and in fact, all of our panelists are very, very knowledgeable about wrestling, and they're nice people, every one of them. So tonight, we have the one and only Vinnie Barry, who has come out. He had Lance by Chance, I believe, last year, and now he has got a biggie. It is Wrestleville, the Pro Wrestling Vault, Volume 1. Vinnie Barry, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having me on. Good evening, everybody.
We're glad to have you here. Why don't you start off the discussion? Tell us a little bit about what the book is and what were you trying to do? Because you've got a great concept in it. I've seen it. I've got it over there somewhere in my stack of books. You got a great concept. You got a great book. So tell us about it. And then when you run out of some air, I'm just going to do a toss-up, and I'm going to say any of our three co-hosts, get in there with a question. So, Vinny, you are on deck.
Well, I wrote this book. My website, my company is Wrestleville, and the book is called The Pro Wrestling Vault, Volume 1. And inside the book contains 35 short stories. It has over 400 pictures from the independent scene. And you can almost find anybody in this book. I mean, there are so many different wrestlers from different, you know, I mean, of course, not everybody in the profession is in there, but the who's who. And I mean, you can find Harley Race, and there's Jimmy Valiant, and I mean, it just goes on and on and on. But I think what's so cool about this book is not only are there in the stories 35 short stories, you have stories of guys like Bobby Fulton, Tracy Smothers, C.W. Anderson, Ricky Morton, Harley Race, Bushwhacker Luke. But you also got guys in there like Tim Storm and Barrett Brown, Van Horn, Chris Michaels, Chase Owens, Mr. USA, Alan Steele, Sir Mo. You know, a lot of guys that, you know, there's an interview with Bruce Thorpe and James Beard and Bill Dundee in here. You know, a lot of guys that, some of those guys that I've mentioned, gotten a lot of press in their career, but there's a lot of guys that a lot of people don't know, and so it's a mix of veterans. I started doing these interviews from about 2017, I think I started, and they go to about the end of 2018, and I had these stories, and my friend had a ton of pictures from the Gulf Coast region of the United States, and I was, after I wrote the Lance Von Erich book, I did have a different thought for a book, but I kind of hit walls with it. And after talking to my friend Jean-Paul LeBlanc, the photographer from New Orleans, the photographer from the New Orleans, Louisiana, he told me that, look, I have all these pictures. I'm never going to put them in a book. You're more than welcome to them. And he has over 10,000 pictures, and it took me forever to sift through them. But I put them in the middle of the book and just kind of broke up the stories. And I called it the Pro Wrestling Vault because you don't know what's in it until you open the book. And I want to read what I put on the back cover. It says, Wrestleville was created to honor and highlight those individuals who have made sacrifices to entertain the millions of fans who watch pro wrestling annually. The words and photos contained in this book are history. Their purpose is to help preserve the memories that promoters, wrestlers, managers, and valets have created over the years. Wrestleville, where is Wrestleville? Wrestleville is everywhere. It is where wrestling lives. And that is what Wrestleville is to me.
Yep.
That's a beautiful statement, Vinny. It really is. And I can't think of anybody that has wrestled more in Wrestleville than the one and the only Susan Green. It sounded like to me you were just talking about Susan Green there. Susan, what do you think? Pro wrestling's all over the world. It's in every town, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that it is, but the only thing I can say, I heard him name all men. I didn't hear woman one in the introduction.
Well, I will
hey,
say
he's
this.
He's got Thunder Rosa.
I will say this, Susan. I had tried to reach out to you on Facebook, and at the time that I was collecting these stories, only one woman agreed to do an interview with me, and her name was Shay Summers. But, that is the thing that I love. I love interviewing women. I love doing stories on women. There's a lot of women in the business. But when I started watching pro wrestling, and, I mean, I'm familiar with your career, so you might have a different perspective of it because you were actually in the business. But when I was 14, 15 years old, it only seemed like there was a handful of women in the business that would go around the United States and wrestle. And it wasn't like...
That's very true. There was like 37 of us, and we broke you. We didn't make you. You know, if you wanted to be in wrestling, you had to be able to defend yourself. Because if you got caught in this back alley, we couldn't tell the promoter, well, she got beat up last night. You know, well, why couldn't she take care of herself? She did last night in the ring. So we had to be able to take care of ourselves outside the ring as well as we did inside the ring. So that was back from the 40, 50, 60, 70s, and I guess in the 80s when it started becoming WWF and then all the other promotions started going out, that it became more of an entertainment than it did the wrestling. It was more the how many flips can you do than how long can you hold that hold.
Sure. Sure.
I guess a lot of times, so to me, 1 minute they'd get it right that Joe Blanchard trained me, and then, you know, I wrestled actually 2.5 years before I came out on the East Coast and started wrestling under Lillian Ellisor's Girls School of Wrestling, and they're here in Columbia, South Carolina. So at 1 minute I'm trained by her, and the next minute I'm trained by the one that really trained me. So it's funny how everyone says, oh, you know, Moolah. And I said, you know, I wasn't Moolah. I wrestled for 2.5 years and actually got beat up pretty bad my first 2.5 years because I had no idea that they knew who was going to win. They beat me and they hooked me So they actually hooked me and pinned me. You know, I had no idea. They shot on me to take the win, you know. But 112 pounds when I was still in high school, it wasn't hard to beat me when you're 140. But I would only do it on weekends or the holidays from school. And my school actually said if I missed a day of school, my junior and senior year, that I would be expelled from school because I was giving it up for a sport. And I was the sport I was in for school was swimming and tennis. So if something happened in the swimming or tennis, I could be absent or in a hospital. But if I had a car wreck because I was coming home from a wrestling match, well, I better come in on a stretcher because I was going to be expelled from school because of the wrestling match. But Joe Blanchard, he taught me well, you know. And then Danny Hodge caught me when I come back from Japan, and the girls over there had beat me up so bad that had 35 stitches in the back of my head. And he says, well, you're going to learn how to hook them and not let them get away with that anymore. So, you know, I had many other guys that did amateur wrestling that took me under their wing to show me how to take care of myself when someone got smart.
I don't want to cut Susan Green off, but I got a question for Vinny, if that's okay, Dr. John.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about, I think Susan was just talking about Japan. I was reading chapter 16. I need to read cover to cover, but I definitely went to that because the last interview we did, you mentioned Don Callis, and that was an interesting story of him scolding Lance. But there was a part in that chapter where Kevin, I believe, got kicked, and they mentioned that could have been retaliation, but Lance kind of denies it. Can you go into that?
Oh, so yeah, I know the story. It has been a little while since I talked about this story, so give me a moment to just go through this. Here's what happened. Lance went over to Japan for a tour, and wasn't accustomed to the culture, you know, been to several places in Europe, but never went to Japan. Went to Japan for the first time when he wrestled for the Von Erichs. And he got there and he didn't have to wrestle for like, I think 4 days. And he started drinking, but the hotel he was staying at, he, for whatever reason, he couldn't get any beer. So he was drinking scotch and he got very drunk and he stayed drunk, and mm-hmm. when they came and picked him up to wrestle, he was still drunk and got to the match and didn't do well at all, and that was where Don Callis called him out. And then he wrestled a couple other times sober and did well, but left. He just left in the middle of his tour. He left, I guess he was there about a week. He had another week to go, but he went to Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And the story goes that, this is from Kevin. This is Kevin's story, that he was in the hospital and his father came to him and said, you got to get out of the hospital and go to Japan because Lance let us down and left. So Kevin went over there and he got like blindsided by the guy that he was wrestling. And from Kevin's story was that he had a head injury and the guy kicked him in the head. So supposedly Kevin broke this guy's leg. That was the story from Kevin, because he had to end the match because he was concerned that he would die because of his head injury. Well, Lance and I had talked to the booking agent or the person who was doing the scheduling at the time, the out-of-town scheduling, and supposedly nobody went in Lance's place. Nobody, mm-hmm. nobody covered for him at that time. Kevin might have gone at a later time, but he didn't go that week that Lance had left. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we got Kevin's story in there, and we've got, you know, we've got what Kevin said, and we've got what Lance said.
Yeah, I like that you were able to cover both sides of the story. Any Japan tour stories I love hearing about. It's always a pleasure to hear Susan talk about bleeding over there or Von Erich's having a culture clash over there or getting some stiff action. I actually read in that chapter that the Von Erichs were known to be very stiff, and Lance was able to work not stiff. Can you comment on that?
Well, you know, a lot of the wrestlers said that. You know, Johnny Mantell told me that if you can see any matches where this is what he told me. If you ever see any matches with him wrestling against the Von Erichs, he had one hand on his face and one hand on his crotch, you know, because he was afraid that he would get a wild shot. But in that new book, The Pro Wrestling Vault Volume 1, if you like Japan nice. Stories, there's a really cool story in there by Van Van Horn. And Van Van Horn was a basically a jobber. He started out in Jerry Lawler was, I guess, the booker at the time.
Wow.
And Van Van Horn was wrestling with his name escapes me now, but the team was called the Beach Boys. And Van Van Horn's partner didn't like the outfit because they wore jams, and he kept on tearing his pants, and he wanted, because they weren't flexible, he wanted to wear spandex, and Jerry Lawler fired the guys. Well, Van Van Horn went off to be a jobber for the WWF and did some matches up there. That's how I heard of Van Van Horn. Well, Van Van Horn ended up wrestling in Missouri with a guy named Motley Cruz. And if you remember in the 1980s, the movie, the gang movie, the Warriors, you know, Warriors,
yeah.
come out and play, yay. You remember that? Well,
yeah. bottles.
Okay. Well, there was a gang in there, like a baseball gang, that painted their face. Well, Van Van Horn and Motley Cruz did this. And there's a picture. Van gave me the picture. It's in the book. And they painted their face white, and they wore baseball outfits and had bats. And Bruiser Brody was booking in Missouri, and he came across these guys in St. Louis, and he goes, look, I love this gimmick. You know, I think that, you know, Japan, you know, they love wrestling and they love baseball, and I think you guys would do very, very well over there.
Right.
And he goes, look, you guys get your passports ready, get your business in order, and when I come back from Puerto Rico, we're going to Japan. Well, Bruiser Brody never came back from Puerto Rico.
Yep.
And that story's in the new book. And if that's the
wow.
thing I think about the book is what's so special is it's not like, oh, I won this title and I wrestled this guy and I won this title. These are personal stories from these guys, you know. And young lady, this one young lady, I liked her. I talked to her recently, and she's not wrestling at this time. But me and my friends liked her. You know, we liked her attitude. We liked her facial expressions. She was tough. She had this punk rock attitude, and she talks about how she talks about how punk rock, you know, like that was the style. She wanted to take that punk rock attitude from her band into wrestling, and I think she did it. And in that story, she talks about going to a seminar and being trained by Daphne, and how much she respected Daphne. And when I was formatting this book, Daphne passed away, and I put a picture in the end of the book. It affected me. I know it affected a lot of people. And I just felt like it was fitting to close the book with her picture. And I put her the dates of her birth and her death. And we also added the suicide prevention number in there, too. And our hope is that, you know, if that number helps one reader or anybody, you know, then that book served its purpose, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Can you repeat the name of that wrestler you were talking about just now? Not Daphne, but the one that was trained by Daphne.
Well, she actually wasn't trained by Daphne, but she did. She was in a seminar with her and really was. Daphne spent some time with her at that seminar. Her name was Shay Summers. And Shay really liked the fact that, you know, she grew up watching Daphne and then she had the opportunity to learn from her. And, you know, she was taking notes from her and just really was honored to spend some time with Daphne. And those are the stories that are in the book. You know, I am already putting volume 2 together, but there's some great stories in that too. And that's what I think about people are going to, you know, when you pick up a book, an autobiography like Lance's book, you know, there's a lot of stuff in that book about world class and the guys that were in world class. But, you know, initially it's about Lance Von Erich and his career and how he got started and how, you know, what he did after he got out and whatnot. But if you pick up this Pro Wrestling Vault Volume 1, it's 35 short stories, you know, and you're going to learn about these guys, and you're going to get a little bit where you can read it. If you ride a bus, you could read 3 stories before you get to work. You know, you don't have to commit to this long book, but you've got these different stories where you can jump around, and if you get tired of reading, you can look at the pictures. It's a very entertaining piece of work, you know, with over 400 pictures and 35 stories. There's a lot of wrestling in this book.
I had a brief interaction with Daphne. She even told me stories I can't repeat publicly or privately, probably, because one of them is just so gross, but she was a super nice lady, is what I heard. A pleasure to be around. But, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I wanted to ask you about Jimmy Rave. Like, I wish I could have picked his brain, but he needed help, and he was suffering at the time, so I didn't want to bother him. But a lot of the wrestlers I've seen, there's wrestlers everywhere that pay tribute to Jimmy Rave. You know, somebody from GCW did it recently, Chase Owens from New Japan. So it seems like his influence is bigger than I imagined after he passed. But can you talk about Jimmy Rave and interviewing him?
You know, when I talked to Jimmy Rave, that was after he lost his arm. And, you know, he was trying to figure that out. You know, he was telling me that, you know, the day before we interviewed, he said, like, he was telling me a story. He goes, yesterday I went to the coffee shop in my neighborhood and I ordered a bagel. And when I got home, I was trying to put cream cheese on it. And he said, I never would have thought how difficult that would have been with one hand. But he said that was very difficult, you know. And when he shared that story, you know, it just made me think, like, wow, man, you know, I take my health for granted every day. I mean, who doesn't do that, you know? And I talked to him for about a half hour, you know. The interview on my podcast or on my website is what, probably 15, maybe 20 minutes. It's not very long. But, you know, he talked about how he wanted to, you know, how he was, his students had set up a GoFundMe to raise an arm, but he was talking about the expenses of an arm and all these kind of different arms. You know, you've got all these, you've got one for cosmetic, you got one for, you know, working, you know, operating in everyday life, you know, and, you know, they're different prices and they have different functions. And you know what? I never thought about that. I just always thought, well, prosthetic arm, or prosthetic arm is a one fits all, right? And it's not that at all. So that was the challenge.
Yeah, I've got a friend that's got a leg, and he was telling me that it was 35 pounds, and I couldn't imagine that Olympic runner from Japan, Australia, running on those blades and them being 35 pounds. You know,
right.
That'd be a heck of a lot of weight to carry.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm glad we covered that. I did want to ask, I was listening to an interview you did recently, I think a month ago, and you were mentioning some names. You mentioned Damian Wayne. How do you know him? Did he work Texas? I've seen him work in Virginia plenty, and he's very old school, reminds me of Terry Funk. He's very Tully Blanchard influence. Can you talk about Damian Wayne?
Well, I discovered Damian Wayne probably around 2010, 2011. It was about that time when I moved to South Texas, and I met some guys that were into independent wrestling, and we went to a show down here, and we saw Adam Pearce, and I started doing some research on Adam Pearce and came across Damian Wayne and Tokyo Monster and Franco Siasto and Chance Prophet, all these guys. And then I found a promotion. I think it was out of, was Virginia Championship Wrestling or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been there before.
Okay. And I was watching that, and he was on there a bit. And so when I started writing stories about wrestlers, he was one of the first guys I reached out to because I respected his work. I thought he was a great wrestler. I always enjoyed watching him. And, you know, he was very accommodating and a very nice guy. And, you know, he's just one of those guys that I've kept in contact, you know, with. And I reach out from time to time and we chat and talk a little bit. But, yeah, you know, it's just, I basically cold call these wrestlers, you know. It's not like I know them. I just reach out to them and those who I'm interested in. There's a lot of people who I reach out to that don't agree to do the interview or don't interview with me or people I can't get a hold of. And then there's some people who I kind of go for the high-hanging fruit sometimes, you know, like when I reached out to Harley Race, I didn't think I'd talk to Harley Race. Matter of fact, I wasn't even planning to talk to Harley Race. And, you know, when I was talking to Larry Henning, he asked me, Larry Henning said, well, what did Harley say about all this? And I said, well, I didn't talk to Harley. He goes, you want to? Let me get his number. Well, I would have never thought that I'd interview Harley Race, and that was a big deal for me, you know. So, you know, you never know who's going to say yes, and you never know who's going to say no. But, you know, I just believe that, you know, one no is closer to the next yes. So I just keep on knocking.
Yeah.
I got to follow up on that. You interviewed Harley Race. He's got a long history in Japan. Pro Wrestling Noah was kind of like a second family to him. I know he managed Morishima in the States. Did he talk about Japan at all when you interviewed Harley Race?
No, he did not. He talked about how he got into wrestling. He talked about punching his he went to a wrestling match with his brother and his dad. He was about 14 or 15 years old. And he made a decision that night that's what he wanted to do. And his parents were like, you're too young, and he had Shortly after that, he went to school, and he punched his principal in the face and got kicked out of school. And so he went home to his parents and said, well, now that they kicked me out of school, can I go to training wrestling now? They didn't say no.
Yeah.
And he lied about his age, too.
Oh, wow. I've heard the Hardy Boys said that, too.
Had to go before the governor of Texas so I could get licensed to start wrestling at 15.
Wow.
Who
was governor then?
Going to use me. John Conley.
Interesting.
Yep.
Wow. Oh,
yeah. All my money got put in the bank. So whenever I went on the road wrestling in 71, when I graduated in May, I had all my money to use. Which wasn't a whole lot of money. I guess you would look at it, yes, it was back then in those days in the 70s, when I started in 69 and then in 71 when I graduated, to have the $6,000 saved up. That was a lot of money to have, to rely on.
Back in those days, Susan, you're right, back in those days, 70s, that was a fortune. To have $6,000,
yeah,
I remember.
Yeah.
I remember when $6,000 was a ton of money. Today, it's a used car.
Yeah, bought my brand new Torino in '71 for $2,700 cash. You know, and it was loaded.
Oh my God!
Yeah, and then in '73 when I got my Galaxy 500 because I said my Torino was too small to carry everybody. So I bought a bigger car, and it was $3,500 cash. Mm. And I look at the prices of cars now, and it's like, I could have bought a fortune. I'd have had a mansion.
I probably can go on too long, but I got a question for Vinny. There was some controversy with Bloodhunter Hannibal, and you've been interviewed by him. Can you talk about kind of your interaction with Hannibal online, the interview you did, and can you comment on the spike controversy and just independent wrestling in Texas in general? Because that's something that seems to be hot right now with independent wrestling in Texas, and the Hannibal incident got blown up so much, you know, after that spike incident. Can you talk about Hannibal Bloodhunter, if you don't mind?
Well, I think independent wrestling is a hot ticket anyway. I mean, I love independent wrestling, and that's why I write about it. You know, I mean, there's nothing like paying anywhere to $10 to $20 and, you know, you could be anywhere in the venue and it's a great seat, you know, and the access to these people, you know, you can have a conversation with these people and it's, you know, it's intimate and it's great action and it's good entertainment. And I think it's like that across the United States. I don't think it's just Texas alone. Texas got a lot of promotions. There's no doubt about it. When I talked to Hannibal was very nice to me. He gave me an opportunity to talk about my book. He helped me push my book, you know. I think everybody knows has seen the video or, you know, who has wanted to see the video. And I think it's, you know, I wasn't there. You know, I've already heard all these, you know, I've heard this story and that story and this story, and I've heard several stories, you know, and it's like, everybody's got a side, you know. I wasn't there. It was a very disheartening situation, you know, and I felt bad for the gentleman who got injured. I know him a little bit. I mean, I've met him several times. Matter of fact, I photographed his very first wrestling match up in Sherman, Texas, and I sent him the few pictures that I had. Somehow I had posted something. He said, hey, that was my very first match I refereed. Do you have any pictures? Did you get me in any shots? And I said, actually, I've, I have a couple, and so I sent those to him. And, you know, he's a very nice guy, and, you know, I don't have an opinion on what happened because I've heard so many different things, you know. I say so many different things. I've heard three different stories.
I think the most interesting part to me is that Kevin Sullivan was involved, because he's such an interesting personality, and he seems to be connected with controversy, and he's had a positive influence on wrestling too. But have you ever interacted with Kevin Sullivan at all?
I reached out to him and asked him if he'd do an interview with me, and he said he texted me back and said, I will get back to you in a week or so with a smiley face.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never heard back from Kevin Sullivan. But, you know, that's, again, you know, I can always reach out to
him
again. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Look, you know, I just, like I said, when somebody says no, I just go to somebody else. I mean, people want to tell their story, and I want to tell stories. And, you know, I think everybody deserves a right to have their story told. And if they want to talk, you know, we'll do an interview, and we'll do a podcast or do a story for the website. And, you know, I've been rejected so many times where, you know, it's like, you know, I kind of welcome it because, like
right.
I said, you know, it's one no closer to the next yes. Someone's going to say yes. Yeah. Someone's going to do an interview. And, you know, that's kind of what I enjoy doing. So it really doesn't bother me for those who, you know, because they could, hey, I know these people are busy, you know. I appreciate the time they give with me.
I did want to ask, you were doing MMA matchmaking in Texas. How long ago was that? How long was that? And can you name somebody from that time, that Texas MMA period, that we should all look up?
Well, there was a guy named Alex Hernandez who I put on some cards. There was a gentleman named Ray Trujillo. His name is Trujillo. I know I'm not pronouncing it right. That's why I spelled it. There is a gentleman named Hayward Charles, DJ Fuentes. Let's see, Ryan Spann, Brian Castillo. You know, and let's see. Who else? I'm trying to think. Well, let's see. Oh, Dimitri Ivy. He was.
Okay.
But, you know,
and,
that was a very interesting time in my, you know. Did I tell you the story how I got to do that, Stephen?
No, please do. If we haven't, done, we might have told it before, but please tell it again.
Well, I was living here in South Texas in the Rio Grande Valley. You know where that is, right, Susan?
Oh, yeah.
And I was covering boxing.
Brownville and McAllen?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I was covering boxing and MMA. And
okay.
It got to the point where, and we weren't making any money. Me and my buddies were covering shows a couple times a month and traveling and, you know, it started to get expensive and timely. And at the time, I had a couple, you know, I had the AC was broken, the car was broken, the dog was sick, and, you know, it was like, look, if I'm doing all this work for free, I better pick up a part-time job to kind of bail me out of my woes. And,
yeah.
I was applying at a grocery store to be a butcher, and I got a phone call from this promoter who knew that I did some video work and wanted me to go to Beaumont and interview some fighters from Beaumont, Texas, which is I think about a 6 or 7 hour drive or 6 hour drive from where I live. And I told him, well, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing combative sports right now, and kind of told, you know, I knew him a little bit, and I just said, hey, this is kind of what I'm going through right now. So I'm going to do a part-time job and whatever. Well, his sister had called me. She did PR for him, and she was like, hey, I'm supposed to drop some equipment off to you. And I said, well, when did you talk to your brother? She goes, oh, a couple weeks ago. And I said, well, I talked to him last week, and I told him that, you know, I'm not going to be able to do it. Well, about 2 weeks later, the promoter called me back and said, hey, I want you to, you know, tell me what it's going to take to get you on my payroll, and I want you to write about my promotion and my fighters, and, you know, we're going to build a website for you, and you'll have an outlet, and, you know, you can give us press and all this. And so I talked to my wife, and, you know, I said, well, what should I tell them that I'd like to get paid? She goes, well, you were willing to do it for the other guy for free, so anything he offers is better than that, right? So, and I gave him a number, and I worked for him, and what happened was I was just writing stories, and he would call me up like 2 days before the fight and said, hey, we lost the challenger to fight for the middleweight title. And I said, well, why don't you call this guy? He goes, who's that? I go, he's ranked number 4 in the state in that division. You know, why don't you guys know this? Or why doesn't your matchmaker know this? And so, and he goes, well, how do you know this? I said, because I write about all these guys. You know, I write stories about all these people. So what happened was he goes, after about a year, maybe not even a year, maybe within a couple months, I think it was within a couple months, he just gave me the matchmaker job. He came in because we'd make bets on fights, and he'd say, who's going to win? Or I said, oh, this guy's going to win. And, you know, I would lose. And so we'd go out to dinner, right? He'd always treat me to dinner, but he'd make it like I lost dinner. But he'd take me out, and we'd talk about these matchups. And he was like, man, these sound like some good fights. And so it just came time where he just said, hey, man, you need to get your matchmaker's license. And that's what I did, and I worked for him. And let me tell you something. I'm just glad nobody got hurt, you know, seriously hurt, because I didn't know much about the sport until they handed it to me, that position. I didn't know it like that. You know what I mean? You know, because when I started writing about boxing and MMA two or three years prior to that, I didn't want to do any of the MMA because I didn't know it well enough.
Yeah.
And people were like, you start writing about it, you'll learn it. And I did, but it was quite the responsibility, you know, to do that. And I was honored to have that position.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm glad we covered that. I do appreciate the sport more after doing some beginner jiu-jitsu classes. And our co-host, Sinister, if he's still on, he is a MMA fighter / jiu-jitsu brown belt. John, is Sinister on the line?
Yeah, he's still here.
Yeah, does Sinister have any questions or comments? Yeah, because I don't want to take over the whole show. I want Sinister to get anything if he wants to ask our guest.
Oh, it's no problem. One question I had in mind. I had a question about Mike Awesome. You know, I heard kind of a backstory on him that, you know, when he was at ECW and he was the champion, Paul Heyman was kind of not paying him and kind of just dragging him along. And from what I heard, Horace Hogan at the time, who was in WCW with Hogan, he had told Hulk Hogan about what was going on with Mike Awesome. And Hogan got on the phone and talked to Mike Awesome and told him to quit ECW and start working for free. And I guess that's when they brought him over to WCW, which he was at the time was going well. And I think him and Eric Bischoff kind of butt heads when Hogan left. Anybody that was tied to Hogan, you know, it was kind of a dispute. So he went back and forth to different organizations, and they say he was getting jerked around real bad. Is that true?
I'm not familiar with that story.
Yeah. It was something that, you know, I'd usually do research and go online and, you know, search wrestlers, and they said that kind of affected him throughout his career, even though he ended up quitting and going into real estate. But, you know, Paul Heyman, the ECW, I've heard different things about him. I heard he's a businessman, but I heard that he doesn't pay people what he says he won't pay them, but sometimes he don't pay them at all. And
I can tell you that's true. I work for that man.
Oh, wow. Didn't know
that.
You know, I talked to Justin Credible, and he said a lot of good things about Paul. You know, I mean, I'm sure, you know, hey, there's a little bit of good in the worst of us and a little bit of bad in the best of us, right? So, you know.
That's very true, but that was one night that Paul probably wished he didn't have a tie on, because I had him back to the corner with the tie, getting a little bit tighter around his throat.
Oh, my goodness. That's the first I've heard of this.
I got my money.
Susan, let me ask you a question. This is Dr. John. Do you think he kind of felt like Lillian, the fabulous Moolah, the way she felt that night in Dallas or Fort Worth or wherever it was?
In Dallas, I'm sure she did. I'm sure he did.
Okay, so he and the fabulous Moolah have gotten the business from Susan Green.
They
know
that I can shoot. Just when am I going to pull the trigger?
I'm glad we mentioned Heyman and ECW. I don't want to cut you off, Sinister. Did you have anything else to add, Sinister?
I was just wondering, because I just don't understand how Vince McMahon, you know, can hire somebody like that and, you know, just bring him into the company knowing that he's left a trail of, careers that he just stepped on and tarnished.
I think he's one of the best managers ever, and I think that they even had him backstage at one point. He was a good booker for SmackDown. I think he's been a big part in this Roman Reigns Brock Lesnar story. That I think he's too valuable for them to lose. They don't want him going to Impact. I think that's what really it is. I don't think they want him going to AEW. I think they'd rather keep him than lose him. I think that's why they keep him around. But I wanted to mention there's an author that did Sabu's book. Was it Mike Casey, or am I wrong on that?
I'm sorry. What are you asking? I'm sorry.
There was a who wrote Sabu's book? Was it Mike Casey, or am I getting the name wrong?
Oh, Sabu's?
Yes.
That is Kenny Casanova.
Okay, yeah, Kenny Casanova. Did you mention him in the back of your book?
Yeah, he wrote the foreword in the new book, and he's a friend of mine who kind of guided me through my first book, and kind of gave me kind of showed me the ropes a little bit, you know, and he helped me on this second one as well, and it's good to have some people who've kind of done this before, you know, before me, and so I have any questions, hey, I'm having an issue with this, or how do you handle this, and how do you do this, and show me this, and you know, he's a very good guy. I met him when I read his Kamala book. He's got several books out there, you know. The Just Incredible story just came out, I think, in December. And he has done Danny Davis's book. He's done Sabu's book. He's done Bruce Beefcake's book. So he's got a good little catalog of literature of wrestling.
Yeah, I think you mentioned him in an interview, so I wanted to bring that up because Sabu is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. Just that crazy suicidal style kind of innovated the current wrestling style, like the hardcore and the high spot, high flying style. Is there any ECW wrestlers besides just Incredible that you've interviewed so far?
C.W. Anderson is in that book. Is in
yes.
The new book, The Pro Wrestling Vault, Volume 1. And I liked him a lot. Me and him, chat from time to time. He's a real nice guy. And I've always liked his wrestling. I always liked his style. I didn't discover him until, I guess when I got the network, I was just going through some ECW, and just putting in, and he was popping up in all these matches, and he was in quite a few of them, and I just started watching him, and I thought, man, how did I never not know this guy, And so that was how I discovered him, and he is a real nice guy. He was willing to do the interview with me, and, I just enjoyed his, talking to him and telling his story, and he's just a real nice guy, and, helped me push the book. And one thing about the book that I think is really neat is that 14 of the wrestlers that did the book with me had sent me autographs or signature labels to put in the book. And so C.W. Anderson and Bobby Fulton, James Beard, Tim Storm, Greg Anthony, Damian Wayne,
nice.
Sean Hernandez, yeah. Supermax, if you know who he is, they send in autographs. So every book is going to come with an autograph, signed. Mr. USA, former junior NWA world champion, so there's a lot of that's a real neat treat, and it's the price of the book, it's one price, and every book comes with a signature. So that's the fun thing about it is, it's personalized, and then you get to read that person's story, and it makes it, to me, I think it, for the reader, it makes it that much more special.
I got
absolutely
two more questions if you don't mind. I know I've been talking a lot, but who was the oddest wrestler you talked to, and which wrestler kind of talked about working office a lot? Weirdest wrestler you've interviewed, and which one that worked office that you kind of got more info than you thought you would?
Well, let's see. Well, I'll say this. All of them, I'll say that the guys in gals too, because I've interviewed a lot of gals since then. So, but I will say this, a lot of the people that interview with me are very open and honest, Greg Anthony opened up about his health issues, where he, had a heart condition, had to go in for open heart surgery. Bobby Fulton was really open, and when I reached out to him and talked to him about his friendship with Tommy Rogers, and I wanted to do a story that celebrated Tommy Rogers. There's a lot of people that don't know who he was, and the Fantastics weren't big guys, they, matter of fact, they were small, but
no.
Dude, those guys had big hearts, man, and they were fun to watch, and so I grew up in Dallas watching those guys, and you know, I felt like I had a personal connection to him. So I wanted to do something that honored Tommy. And Bobby was really good about this, good about that. And, you know, a lot of, you know, these guys are telling, like, you know, immature road stories. You know, these guys are sharing, you know, personal things of people who, you know, touched their life or people who've helped them or invested in them or, you know, things they had to learn being on the road or, you know, their childhood dream. And, you know, I interviewed Christian Blake Blake Christian, I'm sorry. I interviewed Blake Christian, and this was before he went to NXT, and he told me a story that him and his girlfriend, they weren't boyfriend and girlfriend at this time. They were still very close friends, and they hung out and did things together. And they went to a party with another person, and the person they went to got extremely drunk and got to the point where Blake wanted to take his friend home, and the girl wanted to stay at the party. And he goes, well, why don't I take him home, and I'll come back, and I'll pick you up, and, you know, whatever. And he goes, okay, that sounds good. Yeah, I'm having a good time. I'll stay here. Well, he left with this guy, and a fight broke out at that party, and somebody pulled out a gun. And when the gun came out, everybody either ran in another room or ran outside. Well, the girl ran into the bathroom with a couple other people and closed the door and took cover. The gun went off, and the bullet went through the wall and shot the girl in the bathroom.
Oh my goodness. She died.
Oh, my.
And that was the story that Blake shared with me. And Blake was so depressed, he couldn't get out of bed. And his dad came to him sometime after that death and said, look, son, we got to do something, you know. And I'll do anything. And so he knew his son wanted to be a wrestler, and he loved wrestling. And his dad took him, found a school somewhere in Tennessee, and told the guys what had happened. And they kind of took him in and let him work through his grief with the wrestling. And look at him today. You know, he's a hot ticket.
Yeah. I appreciate that story. John, we have 2 minutes left till 10 o'clock. Do we have to plug anything before we go?
Well, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to say thanks to everybody from WLSC, AM and FM, Loris Myrtle Beach. And we'll go on and we'll close this up in a natural way. So we've done our station identification for the 9 o'clock hour. And we can finish up and not be in such a rush, because I would like to get Susan Green and Sinister to ask one more question apiece if they would like to.
And I would like to say this, though, before they do, I do want to tell everybody they can get the book at Russellville.com. The Russellville.com is where you can get the book.
Okay. But, Vinny, if you want to talk to me, awesome. I very seldom get on Facebook or on Twitter or anything, because I got so many friends that when I get on, I start talking to somebody, and then I end up talking to somebody else, and I got the wrong conversation going. My phone number.
You give it to John, and he can give you mine, and we'll
okay.
go.
Awesome.
We'll do that.
Okay.
I will give Vinny your number, and I'll get you Vinny's number, because I have that. Okay.
Okay. And I do say Tex, because Tex is my middle name. So everybody gets shocked and hang up, and which I don't care. If you hang up, I don't have to call you back.
Well, I'm not going to hang up. I promise you that.
You talk, and I will call you back.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Well, that's a good hookup for you, Vinny.
What's that?
That's a super good hookup, and we got one more super professional wrestler on this thing, and I hope I can hook the two of you up as well.
Sounds good.
Sinister.
Oh, yeah.
He's a great guy. So I'll do the same thing for both of you. Sinister, do you have a question before we go?
No. Well, before you go, did you ever have any interview or have any talks with Nature Boy?
I did not.
I can tell you about Nature Boy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
I got a bunch of stories about Nature Boy.
Oh, boy.
Hey, I will say this in the book. There's three NWA World Heavyweight Champions featured in the book, Harley Race, Mike Rapata, and Tim Storm. And then there's five NWA Junior Heavyweight Champions, Chase Owens, Barrett Brown, Mr. USA, Eric Andrews, and Ricky Morton. So, you know, I think that's a real neat treat to the book. And, you know, there's a lot of stories in there. There's a lot of pictures in there. There's a lot of history in there and a lot of memories in there. And I think wrestling fans are really going to love this book because it really celebrates professional wrestling. And it really, you know, like I said earlier, it puts a lot of people in the book who maybe have not gotten a lot of press over their lifetime and or in their career. But it's got a lot of independent wrestling in it, and it's got a lot of people that people are going to know who they are, too.
Oh, great.
Okay. Awesome.
Absolutely. Well, Vinny, it has been a true pleasure having you here tonight. It's been a lot of fun. We talked about a lot of people that we all know or we remember. And I've seen the book. It's gorgeous. It's one of the best put together books because you can read a 4-page story, and that's about what I can do as busy as I am. So it's a great book. And everybody, get you a copy of Wrestleville, the Pro Wrestling Vault Volume 1. I hope I got that right, Vinny, or I got
you
it close
did.
Enough. Go to Wrestleville.com. Those are the doctor's orders. Go to Wrestleville.com. I'm the doctor, and I can give it
okay.
And I can order everybody to go to Wrestleville, and it's great. We were thrilled to have you, and you know what? I'd love to have you back sometime in the very near future. Just let me know when you're excited enough to come back, and we'll get you hooked up with some of these with our two great wrestlers and of course, the queen of professional wrestling, and that's what I call her because I believe she is the one and only Susan Green. And I'll tell you what, when we did the Carolina Wrestling Hall of Fame, it was Susan Green and Tony Rose just all over that thing. People loved them. It was such a shame that my other favorite lady wrestler was not around. She had passed away, and that was Rhonda Singh. And I just think, I think the match in Puerto Rico where Susan, you and Rhonda never made it inside the ring, but gave them the greatest match in history. And it's on YouTube, and it is just, you know, Susan, that is the most phenomenal wrestling match I know of. Men, women, anybody. That is the greatest wrestling match I've ever seen. And she's going berserk. And you are, it's great. So anyway, again, Vinny, thank you so much. We're glad to have you here. Our co-host tonight, Susan Green, the queen, the undisputed, in Dr. John's opinion, queen of wrestling, Sinister, and Steve Logan, thanks for being here and helping moderate traffic. So now I want to make a big announcement next week. Susan, I know you know this guy. I know you know him. He goes by Mr. Golden, but his name is Bunkhouse Buck. Susan, do you know Bunkhouse Buck? Do you remember him?
Yeah. I remember Bunkhouse.
Yeah, well, he's going to be on next week, and I'd love for you to be here with us. And Sinister, I would love for you to be here with us. And Steve, I would love for you to be with us. I hope Velvet will be back. That scoundrel, he probably got caught up. He probably got caught up in some area that doesn't have service because he was up in Raleigh doing some things with his family. But just we love the Amazing Velvet. We really do. So anyway, that to everybody who is listening to this show, to everybody that has participated, thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts here at Pro Wrestling Interviews. And next week, well, first of all, this week, the one and only Vinnie Barry, WrestleVille.com, doctor's orders, go there. And next week, Bunkhouse Buck will be here. He came to us through one of my insurance clients. The guy's wife is his niece. And just she said, "Oh my God, you like wrestling?" And I was like, "Yeah." She said, "My uncle is Bunkhouse Buck. He used to pick me up and carry me on his shoulders when I was 4 years old." I thought, "Oh my goodness." So anyway, we're glad to have you, Vinny. We got a great guest next week, and more great guests coming up on the one, the only Pro Wrestling Interviews. I'll be doing the call around tomorrow to say thank you to Sinister, Susan Green, Steve, and, of course, Vinnie Barry, and I'll get you some contact information. So everybody take care. This is Dr. John and Dr. John in place of the Amazing Velvet, because I've got to take care of my boy Velvet. Thank you very much, and we've had a great show. We'll see everybody next week, 9 p.m. Central Time on the one, the only Pro Wrestling Interviews. Take care, everybody.
And take care.
All right, y'all.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
British lady better get in there. Where is the British lady? Did she go where McRibs go when they go away?
She disappeared.
I know. She just disappeared. You sure you want to end this episode? Yeah, probably. But anyway, well, as usual, we're having some technical difficulties. See everybody next week. Pro Wrestling Interviews. I'm just going to shut the browser down. That's what I'll do. Take care. Bye-bye.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.